Here. On the one hand, speakers of Aleut learning English, and on the other hand, speakers of English learning Aleut. But this is not an equal relation, since English is the dominant language over Aleut, even in the on the local level. That's to say, through the school, through the radio, through the magazines, etc. Which will, of course, affect or promote the actual learning of English. To which extent now Aleut has interfered with English, say in the village of Atka, is difficult to say, since the thing hasn't been studied. But may I just mention here, there has been a preliminary study of Pribilof English by Alice Teff. And that, I think, is a very good beginning of this kind of research, but we cannot give very much of that here. But the thing is here for us to give us some little background knowledge of how Aleut is. And the first thing, of course, is that Aleut sounds differently from English, so we'll go into the different patterns of sound distinctions in the two languages, just very briefly. And the first thing here I'd like to mention is that in Aleut you have a distinction which is unknown in English, namely distinction between velar and uvular, or front velar or back velar sounds. You have stops. This is a voiced stop, as in English kid, in Aleut only in loanwords. And then fricatives, unvoiced and voiced. Now, Moses will pronounce a few words illustrating this difference, and we start then with the stops, first the velar and then the uvular, and he will give you then two words and translate them at the same time so that you can know. Please.
Akin, pe, akin, flee.
And then let us take an example of the voiceless fricative, velar and uvular. The uvular is marked with his hat here.
Eichel, exceed, Eichel, go by sea.
And then the voiced fricatives.
Aval, go away. Aval, appear.
I think this distinction then is difficult for the learner of Eliot, but it will not make the learning of English more difficult, I suppose. But then take the opposite case, where the sibilants. In English, you have an S, an esh, and a z, and a z. But in Eliot, there is just one series which I have written like this. So there is a distinction in English which you don't have in Eliot. And now Moses will give you some examples of pronunciation of this one.
Sus, ducks. Sis, sweat. Susu, fuss. Hizak, almost. Kuzu, all of it.
As you hear, the sound is a kind of palatal sibilant or something, and it varies very much. Some people pronounce this one as almost as an ish, other ones more like that, and depends on the environment and so on. But the point here is that for the speaker of Eliot, this English distinction is kind of difficult, and some people have a difficulty in saying a clear fish, for instance. They would say fish instead. And that, I think, is the only little point I have noticed where Eliot may come in and interfere with the pronunciation of English of the Anton Eliots. Isn't that, I think, so?
Yes.
Yeah. And then let's have just a small look at the vowels. The English vowels, that is a terrific story. Very difficult, all these distinctions. This is for some variety of English, I hope. In other varieties they are different. But in Eliot, you have just three vowel phonemes. You have a low, written A, as we pronounce in Eliot then, and you have two high vowels, and a front labial E, and a back, more or less back, labial U. But these vary very much according to the sounds around it, so that's why I have these arrows here. So this covers the whole thing, but the phonemic distinction only is three for quality, but they are long and short and long. And now Moses will pronounce pairs, first for this low vowel here, short and long. I'll give you the meanings of the words too.
Chung, my hand. Chong, five.
And then go to this one.
Imis, to you. Imis, to choose. Huzel, to dry fish. Huzel, to sell.
Well, in family names and loan words and so on, you also have intermediate vowels here. But another feature of Eliot is that there are no real diphthongs, only combinations of these vowels here with the Y, so written Y. And for instance, Moses will give you examples now. He's not here, but it's not so important, but just that to hear how they sound. First, the combination of this vowel here and the Y.
I go to walk.
And then combination of that one with the
Kuchel, cough.
Yeah. In that case, you heard the uvular consonants around it. I don't know what effect that can have on the learning of English is hard to say, but when, for instance, the English word cake was taken over into Aleut, it became kika. And I remember then, 20 years ago, then some of the old people, they would pronounce the English A as in cake as E. Say, for instance, keys instead of case, things like that. But I haven't noticed that anymore in Africa, so I don't think really here. What matters is simply to learn the English system, which is difficult for anybody as a non-English speaker. And then let me also mention that in Eliot, the stress is mechanic, you might say, depends on the length of the vowels, rather than vice versa. And there are no contrast, like we have in English, between, say, content and content. That kind of distinctions you don't have in Aleut, but you have a very kind of very long words, and the accent or stress may change, but that's more or less, or is mechanic, but difficult to give simple rules, but in general depends, you might say, on the beginning of a word and also on the, whether a vowel is long or short. And I think this will give you just a small idea of the sound system, and you'll get more, you'll hear more of it when we go to the grammar in the next section. In this section, I will try to give you some idea how words are built in Aleut, that's to say, of Aleut morphology in general. General rule in Aleut, a word is built up by stem and endings, several endings, suffixes. And there are no prefixes, such as the English be in beset, betake, befriend, etc. Some of these Aleut suffixes are very much like the English ones. Say the plural suffix, which in Atkin Aleut is S, is an N. For example, when you have the word Ulla, house, singular, you have plural houses in Atkin Ullas and Eastern Ulla. But Aleut has many more suffixes, so that an Aleut suffix may correspond to separate words in English. I will give you some examples of that. First, take this stem here, the ka, to eat, and you add a suffix ku, and you get the stem kaku, which is eating now or something, and then you add an ending for I, so you get this word here, which now Moses will pronounce for you.
Kakuking.
Yeah, that is, in Atkin, it's shorter, maybe you pronounce it Atkin too, so just to make...
No, in Atkin it will be kakuk.
Yeah. Yeah, but no, I've just mentioned that, but we are not concerned with these dialect differences, so we will just go on talking using these examples, which are more or less both Atkin and Eastern. Okay, here you see you have an ending for I, in English I post a separate word. If you take now another subject, like Peter, then you get...
Petro Kaku.
There is a different ending there, you see. And if you take away the subject there, and you get just...
Kaku.
Yeah, and then he is eating. No no pronoun. Maybe. And then we go on to another thing. Like possessive relations, in as in English, my, you, and so on. Here is a noun, then now a nominal stem, Ulla, house. And here, just a simple singular, Moses maybe.
Ulla.
Yeah, the A or the house, no article, come back to that. But then,
Ullang.
My house, just the ending corresponding to the my in English.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the same way,
Petrum.
Yeah.
Petrum Ulla.
Peter's house. If you leave out this Petrum, then you get
Ulla.
His house. You see here, there's a different ending, and then you have that ending also there. So in a way, this is Peter's, his house. By the way, this is a kind of construction you have in many other languages. For instance, in the most close to, in Thai, to Turkish. Doesn't mean that Aleut is related to Turkish, but this kind of construction you have there in Turks and many other languages. And then, one more thing. In English, we have a negation not, which is of course attached to verbs like you don't and so on. But in Aleut is again a suffix coming in between then the stem here and the person ending for I. Maybe you pronounce it, Moses.
Kalla, cocking.
I'm not eating. And here with the noun as a subject, you get the
Peter Kalakar.
By the way, incidentally, a negation as a suffix is also found in Turkish. And over many other languages. Now, but Aleut also has several suffixes which correspond in meaning to English adjectives. There's just a small example. We have house again, and then you have
Ullach.
Yeah, that's a house, the house, and then next
Ullalagoch,
big house,
Ullakuchach,
small house. Yeah, that's Atkin dialect, and this eastern
Ulladach.
Yeah. You see the what is in English is an adjective coming before the noun. Here is a suffix which comes after the stem there, and it has this singular ending after it.
Mm-hmm.
But Aleut also has words, separate words for instance, for big, like here.
Amunako
is big. In Aleut, this is a verb, and yes. With a, just like any other word, like sleep or something. But the degree in English expressed by a separate word like very comes in as a suffix again here in Aleut. It's very big. This is a kind of quantifying adverb, but in Aleut there are also suffixes corresponding to other kinds of adverbs. Just a few examples. Here a verb, avakoch works or is working, and then
avadukoch.
Works fast. You see this ending or the suffix in here corresponds to the English fast. And here
avaza.
You hear habitually or usually suffix again. And then you add a negation.
Avazarullah.
Yeah. Means he never works, but literally does not usually. That means never. These are then, might say, adverbs, or suffixes corresponding to English adverbs, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
But there are also suffixes corresponding to English verbs, like this one. Yes. But that's something in between both adverbal and verb. Like, I am eating, we have that. And then this one here.
Kakada cooking.
Yeah. I stopped eating. Can also translate by have already eaten. And there are suffixes then for to begin to eat and so forth. And some few more examples. And here you have. You can
allora cooking.
I am writing, that is the very simple verb, and then you can add the suffix meaning can.
Allora cooking.
Yeah. And then here like to, and with the suffix usually as I had before, you get to this one here.
Allora to cooking.
Yeah, right to like. And this is an example then of a verb with a ending making another verb. But there are also endings which turn a noun into a verb, like this one. You have a simple noun there, fish.
Kach.
And then the verb.
Kanuko.
Yeah, smells of fish. It's just this suffix no here corresponding to the English verb. Well, now, I will show you an example how this is built up. You can add suffixes to suffixes a little bit. Take the stem chirta to rain, which is both a noun,
chirta,
the rain, and
chirtako.
It's a present suffix we talked about. Now, if to this stem you add a suffix li, you can, at least in old language, you get the verb like this.
Chirtalik cooking.
Yeah, I go out in the rain And here then, this Chesta is the rain, the nominal variant, one could say, of this word, and then this Li makes into a verb. But then you come to this one, you can add an other suffix. So we get Chichtalisa. You can.
Chichtalisa.
Means for going out in the rain, and that is an ordinary term for a raincoat. But now, this is a, this suffix here makes a noun out of this verb. But you can add another suffix and make back to a verb. And then you get this one here.
Chichtalisikukin.
I am making a means for going out in the rain. Let's say I'm making a raincoat.
Mm-hmm.
You can add further suffixes to that, of course, it is a simple verb, but usually I must say the words don't get that long though. But here, if you add now a suffix meaning to try, you get this structure. Maybe Moses pronounced the whole thing for you. I'm trying to make a raincoat, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
And here you see what I'm... It's the way it goes. In the first place, of course, in Aleut you have suffixes, where in English you will have separate words, for one thing. But for another thing, the order of these elements is not the same in English and in Aleut. In the first place, in Aleut they are all suffixes, but even the order between these, the order of these suffixes is not the same as the order of the English words. So that makes it difficult, of course, for learning Aleut to know it, but I don't think it, at this point, this difference has anything to do with the learning of English. I have never heard anybody stumbling around for that reason, so, but it's good to know how it works in Aleut, in a way, also for the teaching of English. I guess this might perhaps give a little bit a feeling for how to build up words, and the next section we shall go on to a different matter. Well, in this section, we'll have a little look at the order of words in simple sentences, that's to say, elementary syntax. The first thing to note now in Aleut is that the verb in a simple sentence comes last, like in this one here. Do you read it, Moses?
Peter, Ivana, Kiduko.
Peter, John helps. Peter is helping John. This order is very strict in Aleut. By the way, it's found also in other languages, like Turkish. Not that strict, though, in Japanese, and so on. However, this is when the subject is a noun, here a name, here is object then. But if the subject is a reference to the speaker, that's to say I, or to you, then you have the suffix we were talking about. For instance here,
Ivana, kid of cooking.
John, help I? That's to say, I'm helping John. Now, in this position here, in the object position, you can also have a reference, of course, to the speaker or the addressee, that's to say, you, and then you get into this one here. For instance,
kid of cooking.
Then you, help I? I'm helping you. In this case, then, the order of the elements in Aleut happens to be the inverse of the English one. That's what one could say, that Aleut is upside down from the English point of view. But English is upside down from the Aleut point of view. And then, here, the other way around, then...
Ting, kidu, kurtin.
Yeah. me help you, you are helping me. So you see, here is an example of the inverse order of elements. If you know, you can, when you have a nominal or a name as a subject, that name can be left out, as we had in the case of Peter Koch. Peter is eating, Koch is eating, then we get to this structure.
Ivanov Kidukov.
Helps. That means he or she is helping John, and not vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
If, but this structure here,
Peter Kidukov,
then it's Peter helps him or her. Peter is helping him or her. Here you see, the order is the same, but the different suffixes. Here you get an M here, which shows that this is the subject, and there's a different suffix here, which shows that is a reference to the object. Whereas here, you have the simple form, singular form here, and the simple form here, which is has just reference to the subject. So here you see, it's a case where in English, the order of the word makes a grammatical relation, whereas in Aleut, different suffixes. Yeah, in the same way, the full sentence here,
Ivanov Kinder cooking.
Help I, I'm helping John. If you leave out that one, you have to change the ending and you get that one.
Kinder kung.
I'm helping him. So see, that's how it operates in the language where the word order is fixed. Then you have to change the suffixes to get different meanings. That's an extremely important point here in general. Let's see now. Yeah, and then here comes then, these were cases of subject, object, verb. And here, instead of the object, we have adverbial expressions. For instance, in this sentence here, which was
Peter, Ivanov, Adon, Huyana.
Peter, John, towards, went. Peter went towards John. And here, this structure here, instead of a preposition, as you have in English, towards John, you have a postposition coming back, and with a certain marking ending here. By the way, these sort of structures, again, are found in languages like Turkish and Japanese and so on, has something to do with this order, general order of elements. But now, in the same way, as when you left out the object, you have a reference in the verb here.
Peter Hadin Huyaka.
You see here, this, Peter towards him or her went. In other words, you have the same M form as in the object case there, and there's the other suffix there referring now to the complement of that one again. And in the same way, if you leave out with a I subject, you get this one here.
Haven huyakong.
Towards him, went I him, I heard, something like that. I went towards him or her. This other suffix referring back to that, to the complement of that postposition. In other words, in English, the difference resides basically in the order of the terms. And for you have nouns and pronouns coming in the same positions, whereas in Aleut, you work with different suffixes, selection of different suffixes. Now, in this, just as in English, you can have an Aleut, both an object and an adverbial term. For instance, with a word like to give. And for instance, this sentence here.
Peter Koch Ivanum Kuman Ariko.
Peter Fish John to gave. Right now.
Mm-hmm.
Peter gave John the fish. Not necessarily, but rather the fish. Since there is also another order possible, you can change the order of the object and the verbal or indirect object, and we get this one here.
Peter Ivanov Nan Koch Ariko.
That Peter John to a fish gave, rather. So here, this is a case where the order of these elements in Aleut corresponds in a way to the difference of articles in English. It's not always so, but But this is what it tends to be. I say, generalize a little bit more than Sutu, but that gives you an idea then that in the language where the order is, this kind of order is so strict, then the change of that order may correspond to different morphemes, different words, like the different articles in English. Now, there is, we go on now to sentences. Sentences where the order of words is more or less as in English. For instance, this one here.
Peter Ayustelis Kanariko.
You could say in English, Peter is out fishing.
Mm-hmm.
But the grammar value is the inverse of the English one. Not for the subject though, but here, literally, if I might say so, Peter, going out, tries to get fish now. In English, this is the basic, I mean, syntactically speaking, the head term. I mean, he's out, and we're doing fishing. But in Eliot, this one is a head term, and then you have this verb to be go out in a boat as a subordinate term. Since if there are several predicates in Eliot, the same rule obtains that the main predicate comes last. But again, it's a very strict rule in Eliot, and that's why I might say that here the grammar is upside down from English point of view, whereas English, of course, is upside down from the Eliot point of view. It's simply different.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so we will develop this thing a little bit, make it a little bit more complex.
Peter, are you telling? Kanarsis Angala.
Peter went out fishing today. But literally, Peter going out fishing did today. Here, the word day is the main predicate, main verb in Eliot.
Mm-hmm.
So here, let me see the order of the, what you call it, the semantic order is about the same, but the grammatical structure is inverse. Just taking one example more for the first person thing.
Ayuktalik kanaksis angaliko angalikin.
Yeah, but here then is going out fishing did today. I was mm-hmm. out fishing today. Here, of course, the order is not the same as in English because this I comes at the end. But this shows you how this is a in terms of Eliot and a verb, kind of auxiliary verb, and there are many posterities like that. Give it just one more example of a sentence where the element has the same order, but the grammar is upside down. Who is coming there? But in Eliot, this is a subordinate clause, so to speak, who is whom, or being whom, coming is doing there. Here is there in English is a demonstrative adverb, but in Eliot this is a demonstrative verb, which is here as a auxiliary and makes out then the final predicate, that's to say main verb, the one which carries the person suffix and so on. You could change it here. So, you see, both in English and in Eliot, stems, maybe both verbal and nominal. To take just one example, in English, cover, just a cover and two cover. I mean, not, I mean, not the nominal there, but in Eliot, in the same way, chapter, a cover and chapter, two cover. In many cases like that, but the distribution of such cases is not the same in the other languages. So we couldn't predict from English which stems would be both verbs and nouns, or either verb or noun in Eliot. This is, again, it's simply a difference between these languages. So you cannot infer anything, really, from the English translation of these sentences, nor vice versa, of course. I don't know. this has to be investigated to which extent now this alleyway structure would interfere with the English automatica or other places. But this will again will give you a little bit idea if now in school students should make bad mistakes in word order in English, that could possibly have something to do with the order in Eliot, and not simply that the students were very stupid. Look at complex sentences in Eliot, not in very much detail, but just to give you an idea how it works. As I said in the last section, the main clause in Eliot comes last, as a general rule, and that's the case also very often in English, of course, as in this case here. And let's listen to Moses reading the sentence in
Ali
first. What it means then, if it's nice weather tomorrow, I'll be going out, namely in a boat. But if you look at this literally, weather nice, let's say nice weather, dawn with it, if it dawns with nice weather, I to go out, shall I, something like that. You see, the order then of the clauses is the same as in English. The difference here is, apart from these minor things we have been already talking about, is that whereas in English, the if comes at the beginning of the subordinate clause, in Eliot it comes last, or really it comes before the person suffix, but anyway. This is, in Eliot, the if is a suffix. It's a mood, the so-called conditional mood, which is used also in other cases. Could be when and so on. We don't go into those details. But now, you see here, it's the same principle in Eliot. And in this case, then, it happens that the order of the clauses is the same as in English, and also that the translation is roughly the same as in English, apart from this idioms here, which we are not going into. But let's not now look at them in another case where the order of the clauses are the inverse of the English. Moses, if you I saw today the airplane descend. In Eliot, airplane descends, that to say, is descending, or something like that, seeing, today I. You see, here, the object clause, we might call it that, comes first, and I saw it afterward. There, the order of the clauses are the inverse of the English one. Then, there are also cases where the order of the clauses are the same, but where the subordinate superordinate or main relation is the inverse. I like this one.
I was cooking on the cooking.
It means then I have been working until you came to me. Now, in English, here you have the subordinate clause. The temporal clause comes last, introduced with its until. The conjunction until. In Eliot, as has to be, the main clause comes last. So if you try to translate this literally, it will be when I still was working, me reach you. While I was still working, you reach me right now. You came to me now. Of course, it's possible to translate something like that in English too, I guess, but the idiomatic English translation, or the best English translation, is this until here. And then you see here that this little suffix sitting in here, which means still and many other usages, in this case here, brings out this temporal relation which corresponds to until in English. Without that one, we would have different senses. So this shows you then again how the order of things may be the same, but the grammar the other way around. But now I should think that in such cases, people do not think very much about grammar. So this thing here would not interfere very much, I should think, with, I mean, the Aleut order wouldn't interfere too much with your English and vice versa. But there are cases where in the construction of complex sentences where one language may influence the other. I'll give you now an example that was recorded on Attica in 71. It is a tape recording free to interview. Sally Snigaroff interviewed a girl about 18 or something, and she produced, the question was what she wanted to be, you know, what to do, what kind of job she wanted. Mm-hmm. And then she made this kind of here.
Secretary artist Zokin, because type to the cooking.
Yes. Secretary, I want to be. Because, Englishman, type, as a stem here, type, want, always, I. Because I always want to type, that's to say, because I want to type. Now, mm-hmm. In this case here, I cannot explain everything here, but this suffix here, this ku here, shows that this sentence here now is a subordinate clause in Aleut. But here you see, it's broken the Aleut order. And also, the English conjunction has become, is introducing this subordinate clause, which is coming behind the main clause. This is a kind of English structure. And a clear case of interference. And I think that this very because is one of those cases where you have that interference.
Mm-hmm.
In Aleut, the way of putting it in Aleut, I think maybe this first one here would be the
time.
I think so, Moses.
Yeah.
That this would be something about meanings, both grammatical meanings, that's to say grammatical categories, and also few words about the word meanings. Let's take this case here first. Here is in an Aleut, a simple singular form, ikla, meaning firewood. In Aleut, you can have a simple plural of that, meaning pieces of firewood. In English, you don't say firewoods, but that plural there in the Aleut means exactly that. So even in this very simple case, there for a singular plural, the usage is different. You cannot go into any details here, but this is really a trivial case. Languages differ also in the usage of apparently identical items, like singular plural. So that's just a reminder that even in cases where you have the same grammatical categories, the distribution of the forms are different. So if then in a class a student should come out with firewoods, for instance, in that case a good chance is that's due to Aleut. I don't know whether it comes like that. In Aleut there is no gender. There's no difference between he and she. But of course there is a difference between man and woman, like Tayevuch and Ayaruch.
Mm-hmm.
There is distinction you have, a little bit in English, more in German and so on, a gender thing. We don't have it in Aleut, nor in Finnish, nor in Turkish, nor in Japanese. But on the other hand, in Aleut, you have more grammatical persons. You have a reflexive third person, illustrated here in this sentence. Maybe Moses will...
Yeah,
he saw a man coming towards him. That's the same, the one who saw it. In Aleut, man towards himself, the coming he saw. Here is a reflexive form here, with reference to the subject of the superordinate verb. And that's a very important thing for distinguishing between several he's or she's in a context, the difference between reflexive and non-reflexive. That's a little bit complicated, we'll not go into that, but I just wanted to mention a distinction made in Aleut you don't have in English, whereas the gender distinction in English, not in Aleut. In Aleut, there are no articles, but I showed you that sometimes the order of the elements correspond to differences in articles of English. On the other hand, Aleut has a very large number of demonstratives. English, you have this and that. In Aleut, you have all sorts of distinction between in there, out there, and up and down, etc. We'll not go into those. In English, you have for adjectives, you have comparative and superlative and so on. These are not obligatory in Aleut. You have certain suffixes corresponding to those. But just to show you how comparison goes in Aleut, very simply, maybe move
it.
Yeah. The king salmon is bigger than the red salmon. This is king salmon, red salmon from Spain. From then, in this sense, of course, compared to. Such postpositions, just like English prepositions, may have different meanings, of course, in different contexts. And in this case here, there is, they are compared to in terms of the bigness, that's the size in the predicate, then it acquires the meaning compared with, in other words, that. That's also very common in many languages. And then there is, of course, the tense and mood thing. That's a very difficult thing. English, at least for me, being non-speaker English, is a very difficult thing. For instance, distinguish between comes and is coming and so forth. In Aleut, you have, let's take a simple sentence like that for the present tense, which you call it Aleut.
Peter
Hakako. Yeah, this is literally Peter comes. That means, can mean two things. Peter is coming right now, when you see him coming. And also, Peter just came, namely, when you saw him coming. In other words, here's a distinction in English between a present then and here, at the immediate past. They are included in this Aleut present. On the other hand, in Aleut, this presupposes that the speaker has witnessed coming, whether it was like a scene right there or a moment ago. If you, on the other hand, if the speaker has not witnessed the thing, they put it in another way, like the top thing here.
Peter Hakalik Ahtako.
Peter coming apparently is. That means Peter must have come. But in English, I guess, you wouldn't always make that distinction. Peter just came. That could say that whether you saw him or just somebody told you that he came. But in Aleut, this distinction is more or less obligatory. In other words, it's not just a question of tense, but a question of evidence. What you witnessed with your the eyesight or hearing on the one hand, and hearsay or inference. For instance, you see his hat there or something, you infer that he has come. And this again is a distinction which is found in many other languages, among them Turkish, by the way. But of course, in Aleut there are also ways of stating past and even several ways. Here are two.
Peter Hakana.
Peter came, namely, at least one day ago. There are other expressions for closer past and remote past. And this is for the remoter.
Peter Hakara Namuna.
Yeah, here is a auxiliary verb there expressing way back in time. And then in the same way, you have also future forms. For instance here.
Peter Hakara Ariko.
Peter is about to come, he is coming soon or something like that. And then this one here.
Peter Hakaran Arna.
Peter is coming later. here you see the auxiliary verbs with different endings here for the close, or the, what to call it, the near future and the remote future. And there are other ways, other auxiliaries to specify the exact time. We don't have to go into that. The point is here simply that the tense system of Aleut is rather different from the English one. And I guess that maybe, I don't know, but in school that could cause difficulties for, I mean, Aleut learning English, I mean, good English, and the other way around, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Just here again, small examples. In English you have an infinitive, I mean, the thing with the two before it. You don't have infinitives like that in Aleut, but there are different kinds of constructions, so-called participle constructions. I'll just show you one here.
You
can translate that seals are difficult to shoot, or it's difficult to shoot seals, but in Aleut, literally, seals being tried to be shot or something like that are difficult. That's just one example. But there are many such constructions which are, they're kind of difficult to explain, some of them, but here again, there is a definite difference between Aleut and English. By the way, here again, such participle constructions are found in other languages too, of course. So is English infinitive with two is not a universal thing. But many other languages have infinitives, but many languages have rather constructions of this type. Well, that was just a little glimpse of the differences in grammatical meanings, grammatical categories. And then the very last, just a few words about lexical meanings. These are really very trivial things, but this is also a language difference, you might say. Take this first word here now.
Kawa.
Yeah. That means a sea lion. It has a scientific name, so the reference is quite plain, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But of course, in Aleut, this is a simple stem. In the Aleut, sea lion is not a lion. By the way, at Atka, there were no land animals. It used to be so.
Mm-hmm.
So this is just a little joke. But then take the word for sea now.
Allah.
Allah. Means, you would translate it in Aleut by sea, but also by water sometimes, namely salt water,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to this one.
Tanga.
Which is water, namely fresh water, the kind of water you can drink. And so this stem too is the verb to drink.
Tanga cooking.
Yeah, I'm drinking water, and also could be also other things. But you see, this point is a very trivial one. Shows how words are distinguished in different ways in different languages. In Aleut, the first distinction is between fresh water and salt water. In English, distinction might say perhaps is the difference between a body of water and the water, something like that. And then the very last thing, colors. Here, this is older Atkin, had one stem, meaning blue and green.
Mm-hmm.
And from Moses' grandpa, I got these expressions like
Inconchidery,
blue sky, we say in English, and
Kigumchidery,
green grass. You see, there's the same word for the color. Now, I just add now that in Eastern Aleut they have a derivative here to distinguish it. So you have a green-blue distinction there through a suffix. But this is not the real point. The point is that in this old Atkin there was the same word for blue and green. And that, by the way, is found in many other languages too. The reason why I pick out this thing here is that when in 50 or 52 I was out in Atkin, and the teachers were trying to teach the students the colors. And they couldn't get at the colors, you see. And but the teacher had no idea about what were the color names in Aleut. So one could think then that the students were rather stupid, not grasping this thing. But at that time, the students came to school, I should say, practically no knowledge of English. So mm-hmm. at that time, these color systems were simply different, and they have the students had a hard time grasping then the difference between blue and green, which was not in the language. Which shows again, isn't it, that way, that a language is not just a names for things, but different structures, even in the color terms. This is a simple case, and as they learn English, of course, they have no difficulty in using blue and green, I suppose, but they could be in other areas of vocabulary that there are distinctions made in English not in Aleut, and maybe vice versa. So one should always keep in mind that even the vocabulary, even the names for things, so to speak, are not properly speaking names for the same concepts, but there are different conceptual systems, might say. So I hope that this will give you a little idea about the differences between English and Aleut. And then it's important then that the teachers who get the experience here could report on the types of difficulties which come up, and this whole subject could be also studied from an educational point of view. So it's just kind of elementary linguistics, that's all.
Mm-hmm.